Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Friday, September the 28th. I think we're starting to get a little bit of fall here in North Texas because the temperatures are changing and we're getting a little bit of rain. So maybe we're headed in the direction of fall, but it never goes away. Summer never goes away easily here in North Texas. Today we're going to talk a little bit about Kavanaugh. What's happening with Kavanaugh? They had a vote today. I've got a few thoughts on the whole process and what happened yesterday with Dr. Ford and Judge Kavanaugh. But I want to begin by alerting you to a post that I have over at the American Thinker this morning, on Friday morning, about what is happening with Cuba. You know, the United Nations had their annual meeting when the leaders of different countries come and speak. It's an annual routine. It's completely worthless, I mean, in terms of value. The president of all these countries come and they give a speech. It's worthless. I mean, nobody remembers the speech a week later. But nevertheless, they all get to speak. It's part of being a UN member. We remember President Trump spoke, I guess, about a week or so ago. And then you know, different leaders at different times. Maybe you remember back in 2007 when Hugo Chavez made that, you know, terrible speech about President Bush back then. But anyway, so the new leader of Cuba, got to make his first speech at the UN. Now, there is a history, of course, of Cuban leaders at the UN. Most famous, of course, Fidel Castro, back in 1960 when he dropped in the middle of a presidential election and gave a real anti-American speech that went on forever. And that was quite a contrast, by the way, to the speech that he had given the year before when he came over here and was on Meet the Press telling everybody that he was not a communist. But the new leader of Cuba came to town, and obviously he looks different. He's not a Castro. I understand that part of it. So in that sense, it's history. But that's where it stops. I mean, the message was basically the same, and the message is that, yes, we have a new guy in charge, but at the end of the day, it's the same system. And he was basically praising the socialist communist system of Cuba. He was critical of the United States. So it didn't do much, I think, for Cuba, because Cuba desperately needs a relationship with the United States, economic relationship with the United States. They've gone as far as they can go, borrowing money and investing money from other countries. They really need a relationship with the United States. But the kind of speech that he gave, I don't think it's going to bring him any closer to President Trump. So I guess the one thing we learned is that Cuba does have a new leader. Yes, it does, at least officially a new leader. Whether he's actually running the country, I don't know. But he is at least a figurehead at the moment. But at the end of the day, it's the same system. It's the same communist, one-party communist system running the island. So in that respect, nothing has changed in Cuba. Well, let's talk a little bit about Kavanaugh. The latest news is that, you know, they had that vote today in the committee, 11 to 10. It goes to the Senate floor, so the committee, the hearings portion of the nomination are behind this, and that's probably a good thing because these hearings were not good for the Democrats. They were not good for the country, honestly. So at least there won't be any more hearings. Now it moves to the floor of the U.S. Senate. There is apparently an agreement, and a lot of this is still very fresh, but there's apparently an agreement with Senate Republicans are willing to say, okay, look, let's delay the vote by 1 week and let's see what the FBI can find or whatever about some of these allegations. I'm not exactly sure what they're going to find, to be honest with you, because these are, if we're talking about the allegations of Dr. Ford, this is something that happened 36 years ago, and she doesn't remember where it happened. I mean, what house or what street, I mean, even what day. I mean, she just remembers the summer when she was 15. Well, that's, you know, summer is 90 days or what, 3 months or whatever it is. So that's a long time. So I'm not sure what we're going to learn, but if that's what it takes to make everybody happy and everybody go on board, fine. I can live with another week. It's frustrating for Judge Kavanaugh because I think that, you know, it's just one more week of the uncertainty, which I think is very unfair on him. But I'm sure he'll understand the big picture. So now it's going to go, I guess, to the Senate leadership is going to request from the White House some kind of an FBI participation. Exactly what it is, I'm not sure. And we may not know this really until a couple of days from now. But apparently the FBI is going to activate. But I think the Republicans are making it quite clear that this is just going to last 1 week and limited to allegations of now, probably Mrs. Ford. So if that's what it is and if that's what it takes to move this thing and get the guy in the Supreme Court, I'll go along with it. If that's what it takes, I'll go along with it. But you know, we had this big hearing in the Senate on Thursday. I thought Dr. Ford came across as a very nice lady. You know, she doesn't seem like a bad person, I guess I'll put it that way. But her presentation, I mean, her story is I'm sure very important to her, and I'm sure something happened in her life. But I don't think she makes a very good case that it was Kavanaugh who did it. Her story has all kinds of holes in it. And, you know, I don't know what else to say other than that. She doesn't remember when it happened. All she remembers is that it was Kavanaugh. Everything else she's fuzzy about. And I find that very difficult to accuse a man when you don't know a lot of the other details and when many of the witnesses are saying that it didn't happen. I don't know. I don't know what else to say except that. As for Judge Kavanaugh himself, he came on later in the afternoon, and I thought he did a fantastic job. I think he made the case for himself. And if nothing else, and this is, I think, perhaps the biggest casualty of these whole hearings, you know, the way that his reputation was destroyed in the media and by so many Democrats and so many of these partisan groups. And so I think in that respect, he said, look, this is who I am. I mean, this is a guy who has been in the public eye for a long time. He's been in very sensitive positions for a long time. And I thought the point that he made about Ken Starr, you know, he worked in the Ken Starr investigation back in the late 90s. Believe me. If there was any dirt on this guy, they would have dug it up because there were all kinds of people going after attorneys who were working with Ken Starr for partisan reasons back in the late 1990s. So I'm sure he's a very clean guy. I regret what he's gone through. And I think the country has to, you know, we as a country are going to have to figure out how to do these confirmations. But, you know, we cannot take, I believe, as a country, too many more of these highly politicized partisan confirmations. I just don't think that's what advice and consent was supposed to be all about. I mean, there was a time when we didn't even have hearings for these nominees. There was a time, I remember reading a book about President Eisenhower. There was a time in his administration, he put three people in the Supreme Court. There was a time when they used to do it by voice vote. I mean, they would literally go out on the Senate floor and do a voice vote for the nominee. And, you know, we're not doing that anymore. And a lot of it has to do with Roe v. Wade and some of the partisan groups in the left who seem bent on defending Roe v. Wade at any cost. Well, we have got to figure out how to do this better, because these partisan nominations, these partisan confirmations are tearing the country apart, and they're driving us into just crazy corners. And Kavanaugh doesn't deserve that. His wife doesn't deserve that. And frankly, Mrs. Ford doesn't deserve that. I think she's a victim too. I think she was dragged into this. I'm not sure how confident she wanted to be dragged into this and who leaked the information to the Washington Post. But that whole thing with Mrs. Ford would have been done a lot better if it had been done privately, if it had been done confidentially back in July when the information first surfaced. But anyway, we are where we are. The first step of his way to the Supreme Court happened today. He got out of committee, which is huge, and now it's over on the floor. And it looks like in about a week they will be taking the final vote. Hopefully, it goes that way. We're going to take a little break. I want you to hear from my friend Carlos Geddes, and we'll be right back.
This is Carlos Geddes Harpies. I would like to see you guys this Saturday night at Tzatziki's at the Star, located at 6765 Winning Drive in Frisco. I'll be performing instrumental high-energy music at 6:30 until 9:30 p.m. Make your reservation today at 972-377-2276. Remember, Tzatziki's at the Star is the place to hang out on Saturday night. For upcoming dates, look for me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
And we have a link. We have a link to Carlos' website on the show information, just click on that, and it'll take you to his schedule. Excuse me for a second. A couple of things on this day in history. Back in 1540, the Jesuits were founded. The Order of the Jesuits was approved by the Pope at that time. And, of course, the Jesuits in many ways became the education wing, if you will, of the Catholic Church. And I know if you look at Latin America, the Jesuits were very instrumental in creating education and developing education. And I know that in Cuba, where I was born, my father and my two uncles went to Jesuit schools. And this was a great experience that they had. And lots of Cubans of my father's generation were trained in Jesuit schools, not just in high school, but even in universities and so on. So we remember the Jesuits who were created or founded or approved on this day in 1540 by the Pope at that time. I think it was Paul the Fourth or Paul the Third who approved it at that time. Ignatius de Loyola, of course, was the founder of the Order of the Jesuits. And, you know, they've been controversial. I will accept that. But I think that their contribution to education is something that cannot be overlooked. Their education contribution in the Third World, and especially in Latin America, cannot be overlooked. Well, on this day in 1941, this is one of the great days in baseball history. It was on this day that Ted Williams officially ended the season, hitting 406 and being the very last major league player to have a batting average of over 400. And what makes the story so fascinating is 1941, of course, was the last summer before World War II. And during that whole summer, there was all kinds of tensions about what was happening in Europe. And I think a lot of people thought we'd be at war. It was a tough summer. I mean, it was the summer of peace, but I think everybody was extremely unsettled about what was happening around the world. And that early part of the summer, before July, Joe DiMaggio put together his 56-game hitting streak. So he took over baseball, and he pretty much was the leading story. But as the September rolled around, Ted Williams became the story of baseball, and he was flirting with 400. And here's the part that I love of the story, because it tells you a great deal about Ted Williams' character. Ted Williams was passed away, I think, in 1999, as I recall. This is a man who was not very popular with the media. At times, he was not very popular with the fans. He had a very strong will, tough character. You know, sometimes not the most friendly person in the planet, but he could play baseball. And as we came into the last day of the season, there was a doubleheader in Philadelphia between the Red Sox and Philadelphia. They came down to the last game of the season, and Ted Williams was hitting 399.6. In baseball, they round that up to 400, meaning he would have been given a 400 batting average for the season. 399.6 means 400. But he said, no, I don't want to do that, because everybody will always say that I didn't hit 400. They'll say I hit 399.6 or whatever. I'm going to play. The manager said, you don't have to play. You've got 400 already. He said, no, I'm going to play. So he played a doubleheader. The last two games of the season meant absolutely nothing to the Red Sox. They were out of the contention. But nevertheless, they meant something to Ted Williams. And he went out there in this doubleheader and had six hits and eight at-bats. So he took his average from 399.6 to 406. So he officially was over 400 and finished with a 406 batting average that year. It's a great story of character. It's a great story of what it, you know, how Ted Williams was as a man to actually go out there and say, no, I'm not going to take it by rounding it up. I'm going to take it by hitting 400. And it's really, really an amazing story. Ted Williams, who my sense is that most people think he's the greatest hitter of all time. It's one of those things you could argue forever. Obviously, there's a lot of great major league hitters over the years. But to say the least, I'm going to say the story of Ted Williams hitting 400 has got to be one of the greatest stories of Major League history. Well, thank you for listening. Have a wonderful weekend, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas. Bye-bye, everybody.